Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a sign of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number 9, let my lies, feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
So there's a tweet by the Astros affiliate, Corpus Christi Hooks, that got me thinking. Of course, the Astros lose last night to the A's. Jason Alexander on the mound. Bryce Matthews giveth and taketh away. There was a point in that game where, look, Jason Alexander wasn't great. We didn't expect him to be great. But in the fourth inning, he bases loaded. He induces a ground ball that should have turned, that should have been turned into a double play. He gets out of the inning without, with only giving up, or at least still being down only one run. Instead, Bryce Matthews, after getting the throw from Zach Short, throws a ball in the dirt. Christian Walker couldn't short hop it, couldn't pick it, and it leads to that run scoring, and then another run scored in the inning. So, a little bad luck for Jason Alexander, but overall, a performance kind of expected from a guy who no one really knows anything about. He's pitched for the Astros before, but on the road, that was his first time ever making an appearance for the Astros in Daikin. He's a former A, so certainly he's pitched in the ballpark before, but that was his first start as an Astro in Daikin. And it wasn't awful, wasn't great, and the lineup didn't do much, so the Astros go down. Shout out to the A's broadcast for alerting me that was the best Luis Severino's stuff had looked all year. Perfect. Appreciate it. Appreciate Luis Severino showing up last night.
Love hearing that.
Appreciate that. The big signing by the A's. Thank you for putting it together, all together for the first time last night. But back to the tweet I saw from the Corpus Christi Hooks. The tweet is the guys who will be starting for the starting for them this weekend. Scheduled to pitch for the Hooks. Today, Spencer Arrighetti. Saturday, Luis Garcia. Sunday, J.P. France. So if you are in Corpus Christi, you are going to see more Major League starters than if you're an Astros fan this weekend. Because this weekend for the Astros, well, if you want to throw in last night, you had Jason Alexander. Tonight you have Gusto. You do have Hunter Brown thrown in on Saturday. And then on Sunday it's Colton Gordon. So just because the way things have gone all year, the Corpus Christi Hooks will be throwing out more Major League pitching, starting pitching, than the Astros will this weekend.
I was thinking, like, is the Hooks, like, did we have that in 2023? Like, that three guys in a rotation in 2023? Like, is there an Astros series where the Hooks are now starting those guys?
It's amazing, man.
It's on the table.
Yeah, yeah. So, beyond the comparison and noting that everyone's in the wrong spot except for Hunter Brown, it does mean we're getting closer.
That is the silver linings, is that, hey, they're all making their rehab starts together, which is adorable, but also they're all relatively close, probably to varying degrees, of coming back and giving this rotation some reinforcements, so maybe we don't have to see George Costanza every 2 weeks.
Yeah,
because he doesn't pitch in the rotation regularly. It's more in these situations where they play every day of a week and they just need to mix them in.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm good on Jason. You know, I think we've kind of milked the Seinfeld jokes dry.
Sure.
So I'm no offense to you, Jason. Maybe if you pitched better, I'd feel differently. But I'm ready to, like, okay. Let's make this guy Spencer Arrighetti next time, all right?
Yeah. I'd even take a... Nah, I wouldn't. There was a Michael Richards thing. Never mind. never. I kind of thought it through and said, never mind.
I was going to say that'd be a good show of, you know, forgiving and forgetting.
Well,
I mean less coming for me. That's all I'm saying.
I didn't see a lot of forgiving and forgetting with Hulk Hogan yesterday. Speaking of, there wasn't a lot of, you know what? He's complicated. I did hear that word a lot. If you don't know,
I mean, for me,
yeah, you did say it. You weren't the only one. If you don't know, Hulk Hogan has passed away, and a lot of the conversation about him was how do we talk about Hulk Hogan because of what he did as a wrestler and an entertainer, and then you know what he was as a real person,
yeah,
which maybe some people don't deem as important. Better
wrestler than he was man.
I mean, he had the leg drop, which is one of the softest ass finishing moves in history. It's one of the worst finishing moves in history.
Yeah.
Think
but
of it.
Still better wrestler than man.
True.
Despite better that.
Yes. Despite the leg drop or hulking out, all the things that seem very stupid today, all that stuff.
I kind of like hulking out.
It was fun when it happened because we knew we were going to get a leg drop and it was going to win. But yes, worse man than wrestler by a great degree. And a lot of it was, you know what? Maybe I'm not celebrating his death, but I ain't shooting him any bail. I saw a lot of that yesterday. But he passed. Whatever your thoughts on Hulk Hogan are, you can Hulk out however you like. Watch old footage. Celebrate his time when he was leading a show called, was it Thunder in Paradise? There was a speedboat involved. He was in he was Mr. Nanny or something. He was in one of those movies. Let's put a big strong guy in a less than big like strong guy role. Yeah.
The pacifier.
Stuff like that. Yeah. Yes.
It's all, he wasn't in the pacifier, no. But a move basically the pacifier pretty that much. Was made in 1989.
Pretty much. So we talked about it yesterday. There's not a lot to get into.
I don't think we need 2 days
yeah,
of
we
Hulk
don't,
Hogan
there's not a lot to get into there.
Eulogizing.
He's just no longer with us and celebrate him or not. All right, coming up on this show, speaking of entertainment, we'll be joined by Michael Carroll at 11:30. It is Fantastic Four Day. We had Superman come out last week. I know Michael saw it beforehand, before its official release. I don't know if he's seen Fantastic Four yet.
I don't believe he's seen Fantastic Four.
But Marvel looks like they're on a bit of a run. We had the Thunderbolts that people reviewed and liked, and Fantastic Four didn't have a high bar to clear when it came to previous Fantastic Four movies, but it's, according to critics, clearly above that. At last check I saw, it was like at 80-something percent from Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
That's just one.
It's high 80s.
Yeah, it's just simply one place you can take some, you can get some context from it, and maybe that lets you know it's a pretty good movie. So we'll talk about that. I think I'm seeing it today.
I saw it last night.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So we'll get a spoiler-free review from Sean.
I'll try my hardest not to spoil the Fantastic Four.
We appreciate your efforts. I did.
I want to talk about the spoiler parts, but I won't.
Yeah, thank you for.
Just know I want to though.
Thank you for holding off, because I know there's.
What would Hulk Hogan do? You know, not spoil it.
What would Hulk Hogan do? Depends on who's in the movie. Looking at the cast.
No one that he would hate.
Yeah, looking at the cast, I don't think he'd be that angry. I don't know. Maybe he has some thoughts on Pedro Pascal. I don't know. I don't know.
If only he was still with the staff.
Yeah. Hey, what do you think of Pedro Pascal, Hulk? So we'll talk
Loved
about.
Last of Us, brother.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't. He probably.
Should have beat the mountain.
He probably would say, doesn't look like a Joel Miller to me, brother. but whatever. Well, whatever. We'll talk to Michael Carroll about that and other things in pop culture at 11:30. Of course, you can call in before then, but we will take calls during that segment to talk with Michael Carroll. So that happens every Friday. Okay. The Hooks have at least 2/3 of the Astros starting rotation. That's pretty cool. Hell, J.P. France has started games for the Astros too. So he may be counted on as someone the Astros go to later in the year too. So we will see how those guys do. As we said, it is good to see the rehab starts from all those guys, because maybe we're talking mid-August before when those guys come back. Well, we can hope for that. While the Mariners won last night, the bigger story is they made a move. They traded for first baseman, so the Mariners are certainly going to go for it. They acquired Josh Naylor. They gave up a couple pitching prospects. Naylor on the year's got 11 home runs and 59 RBI. So a Mariners team who feels like forever could never hit a baseball, they're trying to add to their lineup. We'll see if it's simply addition by health for the Astros. But we talked about earlier in the week that a starting pitcher, even with the likely return of some of these guys, is on the table to supplement the likely loss of Fromber in the offseason. But the Astros are still looking for a bat. And we've gone from a point of not having any pitchers to the pitchers looking closer to coming back than the hitters, with not really timetables on Myers or Paredes or Yordan. And Pena was at one point slightly considered to come back from the Mariners series until Espada shot that down. And we're still waiting on Pena to come back. So a bat seems of utmost importance. There are some names out there that we'll get into. Apparently the Astros are willing to go in, maybe not all in, but certainly looking to acquire a bat to help this team go forward. So they're not sitting back. We will see as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline what surfaces. But names are floating around. We'll get into those at some point today. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans, because while the offensive line continues to be a focus of the conversation, the Texans aren't set on a unit yet. We have Will Kunkel on here. He, you know, fills in for us sometimes. He's out of training camp. He joined John and Lance this morning, and he spoke to this training camp has been more about mentality, because they have been flipping guys in and out. One guy will be the starting center one day and then will be the backup the next. So the Texans aren't set on who their line will be. They're just trying to establish that word that we all know and love, culture. They're trying to change the culture of that offensive line. So we'll hear from D'Amico Ryans when we come back on their process, what they're trying to figure out as they continue to move guys around to find the best unit. So we're just getting started here. As I said, you can call in. 713-780-3776 is the number. But before we go to break and hear from D'Amico Ryans, when we come back, I'm going to tell you about Monument Chevrolet. Monument is a place that doesn't really switch up things. All they do is do what they've been doing for 50-plus years now, giving you great service and getting you in the perfect car for you. And I mentioned the car for you because they're not going to rush you into anything. You can take a look at what they have to offer at monumentchevrolet.com and then make a decision, because the same car you see and the same price you see on the website is the one you're going to see once you step on the lot in Pasadena. It's off of Beltway 8 and 225, and those prices never change. There's no upselling. There's no pressuring. There's no hidden fees. The price is the price, and that service remains consistent as well. The car of the week this week is EV Blazer. So if you're looking for an electric vehicle and you're interested in a Blazer, Monument Chevrolet is the place for you. 0% APR on the 2025 EV Blazer for 36 months. They got great cars all around. Whether you want a Blazer or you want a Silverado 1500, they're there for you. Perfect car, perfect price for you. Go to monumentchevrolet.com to check that out. Then head off to Pasadena off of Beltway 8 and 225. And as always, Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
I would guess the biggest absence right now, at least if guy's not working, because Christian Harris is there, but he's not working, at least in team stuff, but he's at least active and people can see him out there. I guess Joe Mixon is the one. Not that it means much now, but he's the one name who isn't working that people knew didn't have like this long-term injury that we have not seen so far out there, which has allowed for more reps from Nick Chubb. Well, if you're listening in the morning, Will Kunkel talked about Nick Chubb being out there looking pretty good. So if you can have the 1-2 combo of Nick Chubb and Joe Mixon. That'd be great. We'll wait to see when Joe Mixon returns to the fold. But the guys who will be blocking for him and Nick Chubb at some point are that offensive line, and they're working different combos depending on the day. You can see a different starting center, whether it be Patterson or Andrews, and they flipped Aronte Ursary from side to side, I've seen, and the same may go for Blake Fisher as well. But here's D'Amico Ryans on what they're trying to accomplish and the combos people are seeing out at camp.
With our offensive line, you'll see a lot of guys moving around different positions, different spots. We're just trying to find the best combination of where those guys will play. And you also know at different times of the year, sometimes you lose guys, especially at the tackle position. That's one where you have to be able to, what we call, have the swing tackle, where you can play right, you can play left. It's, you know, especially if you're a backup player, you're either interior player or you're playing on the edge. So you have to be able to know multiple spots. And that's one thing that a lot of people don't know about the game. We take 53 guys on our roster. You take 46 guys at a game. Like, those backup players are so valuable because it's unseen, but those guys have to know multiple spots. And they're counted on to know those spots without getting as many reps as the starters. So it's really, you know, a credit to all the guys who are backup players in the league, like knowing what's on their plate, what's expected of them when they get in the game and get action and get the reps. They have to be on it mentally even better than the starters. So there's a lot that's on guys' plate when you are those type of players, and I always tip my hat to guys who are in those positions.
Well, I would agree with him in that regard. I think a number of people know that depth is important to a team. It's talked about quite a bit. But as far as his statement regarding backups, yeah, particularly on the offensive line, beyond swing tackle, I think you would like, in some ways, a backup center who can play guard. And the other guard spots, you'd like to be able to carry a backup center who can play left and right guard. And, of course, your swing tackle is one that's going to move to left or right, depending on who's either injured for the game or injured for a couple plays. So, yeah, it's not a bad point to point out that if you are a backup lineman or a backup linebacker, you probably need to know multiple spots. Right now, Christian Harris would be one of your starting linebackers. He's unavailable, and so he's not in the mix. The case of Christian Harris is an interesting one because we went from, look what he did in the wild card round against the Browns in that pick six, and his ability to cover running backs and be out in the flat and not only make plays on the ball, but also inflict punishment on guys who are trying to make plays out there, to last season where we didn't know why he wasn't really available. He missed the better part of the year. He came back later in the year, and now we're right back at it where he's not practicing. He's out there. And he went from the Texans have a real linebacker to, is Christian Harris going to be part of this team? Will he get a second contract considering his unavailability? So this is a big year for Christian Harris as far as his future with the Texans is concerned. I'm not going to put too much importance on training camp. Whenever he gets back. But the year itself is a big one for him because they whiffing on linebacker may be strong, but they have not found an impactful one. Let's just say a D'Amico Ryans type.
Yeah.
A guy of his caliber. Forget about like Fred Warner, who he coached in San Francisco. He has not found a linebacker, and D'Amico was good as a Texan and later with the Eagles. We have not found one of his caliber who can be a guy you can look at and go, he's a Will or a Sam or Mike for the next 7-8 years yeah. with us, and this guy we want to keep around. That is still something they're searching for.
Yeah, I mean, every other level of the defense, they found a guy, like a capital G guy. They found Will Anderson. They didn't find him. They traded up to draft him number 3 overall, but they have him.
But they got it right.
Yeah, they got a Stingley. They even got a Lassiter for you, too. Bullock, his rookie year, so far so good. It is that linebacker position where they haven't found, you know, the future Pro Bowler. You know, a guy that you can think like, oh, this guy's one of the best players at his position And Christian Harris was kind of the best chance of that because he's young and relatively highly touted. I mean, he went to Alabama. But, yeah, after last year where it felt like he just never was able to fully get healthy, like his rehab felt Astros-like, where it took a little bit longer than we thought, and it was maybe there's some setbacks in there. And then when he played, you can tell that he wasn't still feeling 100% physically right. And then he got hurt again. Now he's missing the start of training camp. So there is a little bit of, like, how much can you, even if he does get back, you know, get back tomorrow and starts showing out at these training camp practices, once you get into the season, can you just, you know, write him in and pin to be in there? Or is it always going to be a situation of, well, we'll see if we have Christian Harris for XYZ game, and it will be back on, you know, the Henry Toto's and Aziz Al-Shaires to man that position.
Yeah, you look at his career. He played 12 games in his rookie year, the 16 in his best season to date, and then only the 3 last year. And so he wasn't very available last year, and that, at least right now, is continuing. When he played the 1 year, on the first year under D'Amico, productive, and of course I talked about what his impact.
Yeah, breakout game in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, and we just thought, okay, they found another one. And he just needed D'Amico and that system to kind of break out. Real, if you want to call it a step back or a real pause to his career last year. So he needs to get back out there. Look, he's been in the league 3 years, but he was a young player. He came in at, like, right around 2021. So he's only going to be 24 this season. So there's still a lot of time there. We just got to see it. And it'd be great to have a solidified linebacker unit just to enhance what they're already building. But Christian Harris, not out there, other than Joe Mixon, probably. If we look at the starters, sure, the fluctuation of the offensive line is one thing, but as far as we know, those guys are healthy. They're just figuring some stuff out. Him, Mixon, and I can't think of another guy that is missing. So they entered this training camp very healthy as far as guys they expect to be impactful. Of course, they have the major injury to Tank Dell, but we all knew the case with that long before camp opened. So we'll see there. Of course, they're at camp today. Still no pads, so you know people get very excited when the pads come on, but that has not happened as of yet. We're only on, what are we on, day 3 officially, or is this day 4?
Wednesday was the first day.
So
they're out there.
Only day 3, so there is an acclimation period before the pads come on. So take everything with a grain of salt. Even when the pads come on, as my headphones almost fall off. But that's D'Amico Ryans. We'll hear from CJ Stroud a little bit later. He has some thoughts on his young receivers, and I think about young receivers and rookies, and at this point, we almost just expect those guys to play well because of what we've seen. Now, a lot of these are first-round picks, but of course, Puka Nacua was on a first-round pick, and he was great.
Yeah.
But at this point, the stigma of young receivers not playing well, and of course, it still happens, but there isn't this thing where we believe, okay, year one is like the redshirt year, and then year two is when they really take a step. If you're a good receiver, you pretty much are a good receiver from the jump.
Yeah, and like you said, it's not just first-round guys. It is the Nacuas, and Ladd McConkey last year was probably the best rookie receiver. I think Marvin Harrison had
Thomas.
Yeah, Brian Thomas. I think Marvin Harrison Jr., like, people had such high expectations for him that 800 yards, 8 touchdowns, people were like, "Bleh, who is this guy?"
Exactly.
But that's like a good rookie wide receiver year.
Even Neighbors went for over 1,100.
Even still,
1,200 yards last year.
Basically, everyone other than him went for 1,000
yards.
Yeah,
so what I'm saying is, if
Higgins can do it.
If Higgins or Noel don't show out in year one, they're bust. Because good receivers play well
obviously,
early.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're bust is what we're saying.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is a situation, like you said. I mean, I remember when it was like, you can't really judge a young receiver until, like, year 3. Like, year 3 in the system is when you could start to be like, oh, this guy doesn't have it. Now, you know, by November, we're ready to, if you're not starting on fantasy teams, we're ready to throw you in the trash. So, Higgins does have, I guess, some high expectations in that way. Also, just looking at the depth chart, there's a little bit of, I expect you to beat.
There's some necessity there. There's some need for him to play well. Yeah.
You should probably beat out Xavier Hutchinson. Like that. Sorry, Iowa State on Iowa State violence there, but
yeah, a lot of Iowa State.
Half this receiving corps is from Iowa State. But yeah, I think that what he gives you is kind of an underrated X factor. You know, probably the biggest X factor on this offense besides offensive line is that other outside receiver opposite Nico Collins, assuming that Christian Kirk is going to operate primarily in the slot. It's kind of up for grabs of, hey, Higgins. I'm just saying Higgins because he's the one that's the second round pick, fully guaranteed rookie contract. I feel like we should see something. Would like to see something so far. Obviously, everyone's been nothing but complimentary to him, which, you know, isn't saying a ton because it's been OTAs and two training camp practices. But, you know, you'd prefer that than, you know, he's still learning. You know, like the soft pedaling. I think Jordan Jefferson.
Yeah, Jefferson. I was thinking of that when you were talking about
Justin Jefferson.
He was talking about J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, talking about J.J. McCarthy was like, they asked him what his first impressions of J.J. McCarthy was. And he kind of goes, well, you know, this is basically his rookie year. And so, and it's just like, oh, okay, got it. He hasn't been great.
Understood.
Yeah, but we haven't gotten that with Higgins. People have been, you know, not just the other players and coaches pumping his tires, but some of the early media reports that we saw were how Higgins looks out there. So I think it's possible that he comes in and is a real piece for this offense, but I also aren't going to put the super high expectations on him.
Yeah, I was going back to look at recent rookie years. And if you go back to 2021, Chase Pitts, who actually is now a disappointment, Kyle Pitts is, we're just going by rookie pass catchers, but Chase Pitts, Waddle, Smith, Amon-Ra, Ross St. Brown, your top five guys in 2021 for rookie pass catchers in yards. And you start to get past those five for guys who didn't really have great years, like Elijah Moore. Rashad Bateman's been paid, but he only played 12 games, but a little over 500 yards. Yeah. So while I was saying it jokingly in some ways that if he doesn't show out as a rookie, then he probably won't be. I said bust. That's aggressive. But you start to look at some of these guys. If you don't make an impact early, at least recently, it suggests you're not going to make an impact. You go back to 2022, Garrett Wilson, over 1,000 yards. Chris Olave. Chris Olave's biggest issue now is the concussions. He can't stay healthy. Drake London. Now, sometimes your situation matters, what your quarterback is. Like, yeah, George Pickens in Pittsburgh had over 800 yards, but he's a good receiver as well.
Yeah, that to me is like the, you know, Nico Collins is kind of the opposite point on that. Is it took Nico Collins 2 years until he had his breakout season, but that was also the first year that he had C.J. Stroud and, you know, competency around him. So I'm willing to write that off a little bit. Also, he stayed healthy that year, which is something he struggled with a little bit early. But yeah, you do bring up a good point of maybe not if you don't show out your first year, you're, you know, bust. But there is a little bit of like you normally see it. See it early.
Yeah, it's generally clear. You mentioned Nico. He in 2021 just over 440 yards, but there are environmental issues there. That team wasn't ready to be anything. Certainly they weren't ready to help a young receiver have a good year. So if you're looking for any indicators about particularly Higgins, if he's going to be a guy who gets a lot of time on the outside, I'm not sure about Noel. Or is it Noel?
It's Noel.
Noel. I'm not sure about annoying. Noel so much.
No offense.
Jalen Noel.
No offense to him. Yeah. I get it's name, but for me, it's annoying.
Yes. To look at it, you think Noel, but it's Noel. So I'll figure it out. It is his name. I don't know about him because Christian Kirk is there. So whatever he gets may just be a byproduct of whether Christian Kirk is available and how impactful he is. But Higgins, if he's expected to be a guy who plays a lot on the outside as maybe not your number two, that might be Kirk, but at least your outside receiver and starting, you would hope to see. Maybe I'm not going to put up Chase numbers in your rookie year or even Waddle numbers, but hey, a guy who you can see it. There's that spark there, and you know, okay, with more opportunities, he's going to show out.
Even if it is just a stretch of, you know, three or four games in November, December, where it's like, okay, did we see, you know, 3 out of 4 games, 100-plus yards or something like that? Or even, you know, end of the game, two-minute drill where he's getting open on a final drive to set up a Kaimi Fairbairn field goal. Like, there should be flashes if this guy is going to be a real dude in this offense. And that to me is why he's going to be, again, second to offensive line, one of the biggest X factors on this Texans offense, because there's opportunity and I think there's a decent amount of talent as well.
Now, how this offense runs will be interesting, because we heard from Nico Collins earlier in the week about how it's quick, get the ball out of CJ's hands, yards after the catch. Will Kunkel talked about that as well. We'll talk more Texans when we come back, but he gave some insight about how they're approaching offense early. Now, of course, it's just the first week. What they will actually be weeks from now could be vastly different. But so far, there has been a trend of what is going on when they do get into 11-on-11. We'll talk about that. In fact, we'll also hear from CJ Stroud on those receivers, Noel and Higgins, when we come back.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Maybe I should take the path that CJ takes when he talks about his young receivers. He goes Jaden and Jalen. No confusion there with Noel or Noel or Higgins. But Jalen and Jaden
is also confusing.
A little close as well. I do know one's smaller than the other significantly. One's an outside guy.
Yep.
And one's the Noel will probably be Christian Kirk's backup in the slot.
Yes. I know who these guys are.
Yes.
And I know the difference.
I've seen enough of them.
Them.
Yes. The field.
It's just I'm so used to Noel, you know?
Yeah.
I blame Noel Devine.
The very explosive
yes.
scat back, whatever you want to call him, from Virginia Tech.
West Virginia. 15 years ago
him
now.
And,
where
and,
if we ask our interns about him, they don't know
no
who
chance.
He is.
Pat White, Steve Slayton era, West Virginia. Yeah.
Tavon Austin.
All those guys.
A little
guys.
Bit later, but yeah.
Yeah, Stedman Bailey, right?
Yeah, another Stedman one? Bailey.
Yeah, saw a lot of those guys. Shout out to Dana. He was more Geno, but that was Rich Rod during
Who's back, by the way.
Yeah, he's back.
Back at West Virginia.
He went back. It's happened before. What most recently? Oh, Scott Frost is doing it.
Yeah, Scott Frost is doing it at UCF.
Yeah, I saw an article.
I think Jeff Tedford did it at Fresno.
Yeah.
Relatively recently.
I saw Gus Malzahn was so miserable at UCF that if Florida State didn't come get him to be the OC, he was thinking about quitting.
Yeah.
I didn't read much more than that, but I was like, Gus, it's probably your fault. You took that job, thought Big 12, and then maybe the job's challenges were things he didn't expect, and he was very miserable being a head coach at a Power Four school, and then decided I'd rather be an OC for a program who just won 2 games the year before. All right,
who's won 16 games the last 2 years or 15 games the last 2 years? Please,
it's true. Yes, that's how you clean it up.
Even though that averaged out to like 7-5 both years,
yeah.
But still better than coming off a 2-10 season and you're saddled with basically saving Mike Norvell's job.
Yeah, we've talked about it during last season that the Florida State people, where Gus Malzahn now is employed, the Florida State program, the Florida State media, everybody around that program was so upset by not being put in the last year, the 14 playoff. That they almost treated last year like a sympathy year, where all they did was think, even particularly in the offseason, all they did was think about how they got screwed. And it led Mike Norvell to maybe assessing his team wrongly and thinking, hey, we're very close. Yeah, we're losing Verse and Fisk and Jordan Travis is gone. But all we can do is pick a couple guys here, hit on the transfer portal, yeah. and we'll be right back in it. And they were couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah, all those guys are transfer. You know, Keon Coleman.
Yeah, they hit on them. They hit on those guys.
Yeah, and so hey, we'll just hit on transfer guys again.
The problem is
no DJU wasn't exactly Jordan Travis.
Yeah, and the other thing is a lot of their transfers. Sure, they came from big schools, but they left those big schools because they weren't playing.
Yep.
There's a difference. Like Jared Verse was at a lower level and played really well. He would have been drafted, but he decided to up his draft status instead of sticking with Albany, was it? Was he at Albany? Or was that someone else?
No, he was at Albany.
Albany. So he was at Albany, wanted to prove himself on a higher level, and did. And, of course, we see he's one of the better young defensive ends in football. So that things went awry for Florida State, and now Gus Malzahn is trying to save Mike Norvell. Gus Malzahn, of all people, Gus Malzahn feels like the type who – puts together a great year offensively, the team still doesn't win, and he campaigns to get Norvell out of there for him to take the job. I see that. I see you, Gus Malzahn. You're not tricking me. You may have tricked Mike Norvell. All right, we'll get back to the Texans here, as not surprisingly, there was a college football tangent in the middle of the show.
Yeah, enough Noel talk, Dell. I know how much you love talking about your Noel.
I love ripping them. You're right about that. I love looking at them and going, yeah, we may not beat Georgia Tech ever, but you can't either. And a lot of other teams you didn't beat last year. All right, back to the Texans. We figured it out. It's Jalen Noel, Jaden Higgins. Here's C.J. Stroud talking about the maturity level of those two young receivers.
The two rookies, you know, Jalen and Jaden, you know, they've came in with a great mindset, really mature guys, guys who love to work, you know, consistently here at the building or, you know, working with me in off season. So, you know, I'm really excited to see those guys' growth and see them, you know, take a step forward each and every day. And it's not going to be perfect for those guys, but I think they're going to make a lot of plays, and I'm excited to see.
And while making plays, those guys making plays would be great. I think it's also necessary. Christian Kirk's health certainly is important, but when you start to look at the depth, with, of course, Diggs gone, Tank unavailable, you need at least three contributors with your pass catchers. I don't know the status of Dalton Schultz really. The end of his season didn't go well. While internally they may feel better about him, I know his name is kind of mud when it comes to like just people watching. It's probably an overstatement as far as how detrimental he was to everything that went on late last year, but people are kind of done with him. But that doesn't mean the Texans are.
Yeah, he looked a little, if I want to be uncharitable, I'll say fossilized towards the end of the season. If I want to be charitable, maybe he was dealing with an injury.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked like he aged like the guy at the end of Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, where he picks the wrong
cup.
That's basically what he looked like.
I was thinking more he stared directly into the Ark of the Covenant when it was open.
That too. Maybe. I mean, George Kolaftis definitely melted his face off, but yeah, he should have been in that position to block George Kolaftis.
Yeah, but when he was given the opportunity.
But he wasn't great running routes.
No.
I know it's funny to hear me talking about routes, but it is something where there is opportunity among the pass catching options for the Texans. You feel good about Nico Collins. You feel pretty good about Christian Kirk, right? I think that we're this guy can do what he's being asked to do. Maybe as a number one like he was in Jacksonville, or for parts of his time in Jacksonville, he was overstretched. But for what he's doing now, feel all right. Joe Mixon out of the backfield, okay. After that, it gets to Dalton Schultz and Jaden and Jalen. That's where we get to some question marks pretty fast.
Yeah. And the talk of, what was it last year? They had like six number ones. Was that the conversation?
It was only five. Don't be ridiculous.
I apologize. Apologies. But the talk last year was how many number ones they had and what name are we going to call the offense, and we're going to be so explosive that the offense deserves a name.
Yeah. 713 connection.
Less of that this year. Less of that this year.
It's the opposite way for me, where I'm like, can we just play complimentary football, just old fashioned, you know, a brand of football that make Kirk Ferentz proud.
I don't like invoking Kirk Ferentz's name in offense with the Texans.
Leaning on your defense, Your defense is going to win you these games. Offense needs to get out of the way.
I don't want Iowa football here.
I know it's been a tough last few years. They go 10-2 very often.
That's true. But
man. It's not inspiring.
No,
I will give you that.
It's not exciting at all. And the offense, whatever it might look like, I mentioned before we went to break that Will Kunkel was out there, and what he's seen kind of echoes what Nico Collins said. It's more quick hitting. The ball's getting out of CJ's hands faster, and also they're emphasizing run the ball.
I think that's what they need to do. Yeah. Especially, we'll see with Chubb. I don't know exactly what to expect. I think it's more something of keep him healthy for the regular season, and then getting through the regular season with the type of injuries that Nick Chubb's had. It's just a question mark of how long he can, stay healthy and what his effectiveness is while he's healthy. But Joe Mixon is the type of guy who, in the recent past, has been like a bell cow back type of guy. Honestly, one of the last ones still around in the league of guys that you can just hand the ball to and not have much of a rotation. Now, if you have Chubb there too, now you're talking about a pretty good, at least running back tandem, and that can be the basis of a good run game. Obviously, you'd need to see improvement from the offensive line there, because last year Joe Mixon had 4.1 yards per carry, and watching a lot of these games, it was the most impressive 4.1 yards per carry that you could have, because Joe Mixon was making guys miss in the backfield to get these yards. So I think that with the change in the offense like Nico Collins is pointing out, I think there's a chance that they have an actually good running game. And again, maybe I should pick a different team that doesn't make people vomit in their cars immediately.
Yeah, it was not a great choice.
Yeah, bad PR the last couple of years, I'll say.
Yeah, maybe pick Michigan.
Yeah, okay, Michigan. Michigan football
this up.
They're
at their best, yeah.
Yeah, run the ball, control the clock. Do we know that J.J. McCarthy's good? I don't know. But either way, we're holding the trophy at the end of the season.
Saying that for a couple years with J.J. McCarthy. Yeah. And apparently Justin Jefferson isn't sure either. While you were talking, and you were making good points.
Thank you.
But I was staring at the television, not because of who was on it, but because of the subject matter. Because we know ESPN star for programming, because they're paying Stephen A. what they're paying them, so they got to find cheap entertainment someplace.
Is it fill-in week?
More than that, it's World Little League World Series week. So they're showing the Little League softball regional. I guess the Florida team beat the Virginia team. Sunshine State stand up, but they win it 8-1. And I'm trying to think, how much research could have possibly been done by the three people I'm looking at to dive deep into these two teams? Like, how much could you possibly know? Were you reviewing film from the SIP? From the regional finals, I'm sure you get all like the Good Morning America stories. Like,
yes,
this kid, favorite food, favorite player, that
kind of stuff.
But breaking down the regionals in softball, who's doing all the research to give them stuff that they think makes sense and they're actually have some level of expertise on this?
Now, Ashley's family is going through a rough patch, but you can't tell the way she's 6 shutout.
At what level are they going to actually have insight into what is going on between 12-year-old girls playing softball?
Her dad's been staying in an apartment the last 2 weeks, but you can't tell because it's a 2 base knocks.
Poor Ashley. Ashley fighting through adversity. Her parents aren't been separated for 6 months. The whole baseball season, she's going being on softball season. Yeah, going back and forth.
Every other weekend, her dad drives her to the game.
Yeah, and mom and dad don't make eye contact.
They sit on opposite sides of the bleachers.
Yeah, they're on different down the lines.
But the mental
first base line and third base line.
But the mental toughness that she's shown
to
deliver with runners in scoring position.
Well, Sean has gone to a very dark and very real place.
To send Lakeland to the regional finals.
I just don't know when I assume the two women who are in the studio are, I guess, softball players. Then you have your standard host who kind of drives the ship. I don't know who, I guess, producers just put stuff in front of them, because if I'm the host, if I'm Matt Chick, I think that's that guy's name, am I looking up the stats for what the Florida team did leading up into this point? I think someone's doing that for him.
Especially like the blowout content of like, you know, we talk about it in NFL games of like, oh, it's going to be tough, or baseball games, like, oh, you know, Todd and Blummer are going to have to really dig deep to talk about this game for the next 2 hours.
So I'm talking about the studio analyst.
Oh, this is the studio.
I forgot that there's probably a play-by-play team as well.
Yeah.
Who has to do the research. So, yeah, the game was 8-1. So in the fifth inning, when this game's out of hand, what are you talking about? Are we going through what they like at a Dairy Queen? What are we doing? What are we doing? Either way, yeah, Addison really loves a Bojangles spicy chicken biscuit. I don't know what they're talking about, but either way,
it's regional.
It is Florida. Congratulations to the Florida team for beating Virginia. Florida, from Lake Mary, Florida, makes their way into the Little League Softball World Series. We will finish up hour one with that. It just struck me as...
No, it is.
Interesting.
Shout out to all the hardworking producers over there digging deep to give us some insight on the...
But what you were suggesting was they hired private investigators to look into all these kids to see what was going on. I don't think they did that. I think it was strictly baseball stuff.
What you do is you ask the nosy mom on the team.
The talkative one. The source is close to the Lake Mary team.
Exactly.
And she just
keeps going. You know?
Kimberly's not a name for a kid anymore. Probably.
No, but that's the name of the mom.
Kimberly gave us the information. Either way, the Florida team was able to overcome all the leaks to beat Virginia.
Did you hear what... Yeah,
orange slices and softball.
And gossip.
That's possibly. That's what the Little League World Series on ESPN is all about. Okay, we'll come back. And I guess since, you know, we do about 30 minutes for Michael Carroll, let's get to Sean's list of the day. It's list season, as it always will be until football actually begins. So Sean has a list. It really leans into this show, I think. I saw the text yesterday, and then I saw the list, and I go, yeah. Oddly enough, the producer gets the show. We'll do that when we come back.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.